Watch the MMA Roadshow, episode number 232. It's a very, very special edition. We are here in Abu Dhabi, halfway around the world. And it's not special just because we're in Abu Dhabi. I mean, that is pretty special. But it's special because we got somebody new to the podcast. Farah Hanoon, one of the newest members of the MMA Junkie team, is here. And I cannot think of a better way to debut than to get your expertise on this area. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. We've got Mike Bond in the house as well. He doesn't get as fancy of an intro because he's been around a long time, so it just is what it is.
I'm no longer the young Mike Bond. What's going on?
No, that's right. You're just Mike Bond now. You're getting old, man. I mean, times are changing. We got young kids on the staff now. You're just Mike Bond.
All right, I'll take it.
Oscar Willis is over there. He's working. MMA Junkie Pear is over there. He's always good. He's chilling, playing tunes in the background. We got a little party going on here in Abu Dhabi. It's Abu Dhabi Showdown Week. Is that the official tag here that we're going with? Of course, it's all about UFC 242. It's all about Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Dustin Poirier, and we'll get to all that. But I want to start with you, Federer. Like I said, I can't think of a better time for you to come on the show for the first time because the expertise of the area. We're here in Abu Dhabi for the first time in 5 years, okay? 2014, of course, was the last one. It's the start of a five-year partnership, which this stood out to me from the beginning. Seeing the press release was so incredible because I've never seen this wording where, okay, it's the start of a five-year deal, and we're guaranteed to have a title fight on every single event. I mean, that's big. For the UFC to commit to that up front is huge. So I guess let's just start with the region itself before we get to the partnership. Give me an idea what the feeling is like for MMA, the passion for MMA, the knowledge of it. Because we know, I mean, you know, Abu Dhabi, if you're into, you know, mixed martial arts, grappling, it's synonymous, right? Abu Dhabi Combat Club, the world championships are actually in California, I think, like in a week or two. So we know that name. So we know, like, there's a ton of Brazilians that came over here, right, because of the Sheikhs.
Yep.
So I don't know, just give us an idea. Is it just BJJ that is big here? And is it just Abu Dhabi? Or is it the whole region? Is it MMA? Give me an idea of where MMA's popularity is in this part of the world.
I mean, definitely there's a huge jiu-jitsu community in Abu Dhabi. And you could tell on the previous cards, like in 2014, they had Nogueira as the headliner. So there's a target with that, with the previous cards. But this time around, I feel like, and you can feel it when you see their other fighters, because they're getting swarmed by fans, like other fighters, even guys like Curtis Blaydes. You could tell the sport is growing, and they're starting to know who these guys are as opposed to before. So it wasn't like you've got a huge main event, great fights on the card, but the focus wasn't getting these huge names like we usually see on a pay-per-view. And it still works, because they could do that, because the main event is big enough. And obviously, ever since Khabib beat Conor, it's flipped the world upside down, especially in this region. All of a sudden, it's no coincidence that we're here in Abu Dhabi and there's a five-year deal. It was just the perfect opportunity for them to come to do that, to capitalize on Khabib's win, and here we are with a five-year deal.
See, that's what I kind of wonder. It's interesting because, you know, there was ownership, right? There was a stake. So why did the UFC not come here for 5 years? Do you know? I mean, was that ever addressed as to why?
It was never addressed, but I was hearing rumors that they wanted big fights. They wanted big fights, and I don't think the UFC was willing to do that. And when you see the 2014 card, I don't know if they were like deceived in any way, but it wasn't the greatest card, especially the way 2010 was. I was hearing that they just wanted big fights.
Right.
And to get these fighters to fly halfway across the world in Abu Dhabi, in a market where maybe back then, even now, they had that notion. You saw them, like, Poirier was a little afraid to come to the Middle East. A lot of these fighters thought that they were going to come here and it was going to be, like, wild and, like, enemy territory and whatnot. So I think it was hard for them to do a big card here because you have to convince the big fighters or the champions to fly halfway across the world.
Right.
Why would they do that?
And you've got to convince the UFC to be willing to do it at an off time, right? Because
that's
definitely, I mean, it's going to impact pay-per-view sales, no question about it.
100% because of the time. But now with Khabib, it's like it's a different like target, you feel like, because of the whole showdown week. It's interesting in the Middle East because you've got Bahrain, who's got the amateur championships now. It used to be in Las Vegas, and now it's in
right.
Bahrain. So you can obviously see the interest in the sport in the region and in the moves they're making. And obviously that plays to money, and they can do that. And it's kind of forcing people to fly halfway across the world because I've been to the last couple amateur championships and it's got a nice crowd because you've got people
right.
from all over the world showing up to support. It's not the crowd that I expected, but it's getting there. That's my point. And it shows you the commitment they've got now here.
Yeah, no question about it. Help, I guess, me understand. And I guess everybody, the idea of having these events over here, right? Like we see like Saudi Arabia is like paying big money to have WWE, right? And it's clear that the government of Abu Dhabi spent a lot of money. I mean, we dropped it Abu Dhabi Showdown Week. It's not just the event. You know, there was the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert last night. There was supposed to be another concert tonight. There's parties, I guess, at all these different places. Even our hotel staff here is wearing, like, the Showdown Week stuff. I mean, it's obvious, like, this is really, really incorporated in the community. Is it just, from an American perspective, from the outside looking in, it really just seems like these are just incredibly wealthy people and incredibly wealthy governments that are willing to pay exorbitant amounts of money to bring a global brand to this area to bring awareness or, like, increase tourism?
Yeah, for sure. That's mainly it. Because then you see a lot of the local media and what they're trying to do, the angles they're trying to push when they're talking to these fighters and stuff. That's the idea. Because when you look at the Middle East, it's kind of often painted in a negative light. So when you could get a brand like the UFC to come, you've got Anthony Joshua and Ruiz in Saudi Arabia. Right. WWE had Lesnar. Was it Lesnar that was headlining there? So this is the idea. If they can get these big brands to come and get, it will force people to fly over because they love these guys. They idolize these guys. And then you see, oh, you know what? It's not that bad because the Middle East is often painted in a negative light. And this is what this allows.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The only thing I will say negative about the Middle East is it is hot as hell. The last time we were here in 2014, I think it was like April, and it was a little bit more pleasant. It is literally the hottest place I've ever been on the planet. And it's not just the temperature. It's the humidity. You walk outside.
Yeah.
And you're just instantly soaked. Poor Mike Bond over there from coming from Canada, dude. We got to walk like 50 feet to get to the host hotel, and I think he's like trying to take an Uber over there.
Yeah, my hands are just – you walk outside and your hands are like instantly sweaty and just like everything. It's just – yeah, it's – I've never felt – it's just like walking into a sauna and being in there for like half an hour, but you're outside for 5 seconds.
Yeah, we've been joking like you could just literally – to cut weight, the fighters could literally just walk outside.
Yeah. Poirier's nutrition was like we literally considered doing some of the weight outside. He's like – and then cooling down in the sauna. He's like,
cooling down in the sauna.
Absolutely. Lord.
I guess it should be said too, just for anybody that knows or remembers, the last two events were in an outdoor arena.
Yeah.
This is an indoor arena. Pair got to see it. He went to the Chili Peppers concert last night. It's brand new. As this was explained to me, is it's a semi-permanent structure, meaning it will probably be here as far as the existence of this five-year deal. It seats, I think they said, around 12 to 14,000, depending on the configuration. But it is indoors. Although, I mean, it was still under construction this week, right? Like, they were still, like, fitting the air conditioning in and stuff like that. So I'm kind of – it might be hot in there. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they will have tried to fix that from the past events, especially it's been 5 years, and I'm sure they've heard of all the complaints of how hot it was before. But they're willing to build anything, anytime,
it's crazy,
anywhere,
right?
Literally.
All right, let's talk about Khabib and his popularity in the region. You said the win over Conor blew up, right? And understandably so. I mean, that's the moment he became a global superstar, I think.
Yep.
But in this region, obviously predominantly Muslim region, I think that's a big part of it.
For sure.
How popular is this guy? Like, I remember there was one point where Dana had mentioned that they considered maybe doing Whitaker Adesanya here before they got the Australia thing done. I mean, we've heard this week, like, the ticket is impossible to get. I heard some local journalists, they were saying, like, in 2014, they were handing out tickets because they had to paper to get the place full. Now, it's the hottest ticket in town. You can't get one. There's people flying in from all over to go. So, I guess I'm packaging that all in to ask you, like, how big is Khabib here? How much do people really know about him? And could Whitaker and Adesanya, for instance, have made this as popular a ticket, or is it because of Khabib?
No, I have to say, no disrespect to Adesanya and Whitaker, they're phenomenal, but I honestly think it's because of Khabib. For the simple reason that I've noticed a lot of people, they know the name, but some of them don't even know what he looks like. Because I've had like security and tell me, like, they tap me on the shoulder, like, Khabib, and they're like waiting for me to finish off, and I'm like looking at them. I'm like, oh, Nurmagomedov. And then a little kid was like to his dad, I'm like pointing at Wonder Boy, like, is that Khabib? And then I'm like,
that is not Khabib.
Yeah. So it's like they know the name. They're looking for a hero. That's what it is. It's like everybody wants a hero to support, especially in this region. Although he's not from the Middle East, but like you said, the Muslim community, everybody's looking for a hero. You saw what happened with Mo Salah, the football player, or soccer, as you guys say.
Yeah.
He exploded because most people probably won't watch the actual football game or even understand. Like, most of the times they'll watch Liverpool. I don't think they care about Liverpool. Like, when other people score. Yeah, no, they don't cheer. Like, I don't hear the cheers because I live in Egypt. I don't hear the cheers outside the window when Mane or Firmino score. It's only once. So I'm like, if they win and he doesn't score, I don't think they're happy. So I feel like it's like that right now. But now there's he's forcing people to watch. That's the beauty of it. They'll learn about the sport because of this. And that's the whole point, I guess, you know, bringing him here. People don't know about MMA, but now after watching him, because they want to watch, they want to find out what's happening.
Yeah. Well, it's like Dana said, I mean, we saw it in China, right? I mean, now you have a Chinese champion. I mean, he says it all the time, and it's true. When you have somebody that looks like you, came from where you came from, you know, yeah. You can support him. So let me ask you this, because he had a quote, and he came out, and it was local media that he was talking to. But, and again, it may have been just Dana painting a rosy picture, but he's like, hey, I said it in England, I said it in Canada, you know, I said it in China, and I'll say it here. You know, 6 or 7 years from now, there could be a Middle Eastern UFC champion, or even, you know, there will be, you know, suggesting. So give me an idea. As you said, Khabib, he's relatable because he's Muslim. Obviously, he's not from here. Is there talent enough here? I mean, could there be 6 or 7 years now? Is he right that maybe there could be a champion that's not just Muslim, but actually from here?
This is exactly what I was saying with this card, and then I got a bit of backlash for it. I said it felt like a UFC Moscow card, and I say that with all due respect because there is a UFC Moscow in 2 months, and I understand that a lot of these Russian fighters had visa issues, so they like to get a pay-per-view event with Khabib. But I just felt like they should have invested a little bit in local talent, because I've been around a lot of local shows, and there are talented guys that train at good gyms. And I just felt like that was the chance to get them. Like, especially when Don Madge lost his opponent. They right. got a French-Algerian kid, but he's not based in the Middle East. You've got Team Nogueira in Dubai. That's literally an hour drive away, or maybe 2 hours.
Yeah.
You could have called up a couple of those guys. There was a lightweight there that would have killed to be on that card. They've got talented guys, and that was the point, to give them that opportunity to prove it, since this card wasn't stacked with massive names.
Yep.
Since that's not the angle they went with. I thought it was a perfect opportunity for them to give one or two guys that are actually from the Middle East and based in the Middle East that opportunity. It wouldn't have been an issue if they... Because like, look at Zubaira. He's a huge favorite, right? I don't know much about this kid. He could surprise us all. That's the beauty of the sport. But my idea is, if you were going to give him an opponent that was such a massive underdog, why not invest in local talent? Get a guy, since he's the biggest favorite on the card, Zubaira.
Right.
So why not invest in local talent? And I've seen guys get signed off of losses. So that wasn't even the idea, because there are some top guys that were on 6-7 fight win streaks and they just lost.
Yep.
Which was super unfortunate with this card coming up.
They might have gotten
the call. So in my opinion, I just think it was worth investing in at least one or two fighters. But maybe next year.
Yeah, we'll see moving forward. I mean, like I said, start of a 5-year partnership. All right, so great setup. I appreciate that. Now let's get into the fight, what everybody's talking about. Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Dustin Poirier. It doesn't take much setup, right? I mean, we're talking about Khabib, the undefeated monster. I mean, the wrestling is there. We know what his game's about. It's about pressure. You know, it's about grappling, that sort of thing. Meanwhile, Dustin Poirier, I mean, he's been saying it. It's true. It is like a damn Rocky story, right? I mean, what he's gone through and, you know, to get to this point, all the hurdles along the way, the setbacks. But this run that he's on, man, the wins that he's put together, the fights that he's been in to get here, incredible. I mean, I think we all believe, you know, Tony Ferguson is probably a guy that's like, I wish I would have had the shot. But this matchup is good. It's exciting. Khabib, definitely the favorite, no question about it. But let's talk about what we've seen here, because Khabib Nurmagomedov, you said it. I mean, the event is built around him, right? And yet at the open workouts, in this beautiful Yaz Mall, you know, that didn't even exist the last time we were here 5 years ago. It's the biggest place I've ever seen with all this just like high-end. I mean, it is nice, right? You walk in there, it's amazing. They've got this beautiful setup for the open workouts. And what does Khabib do? Doesn't work out. Comes out and does a Q&A where we don't even have a microphone for the audience. So he's having to, you know, repeat what's said. And it not bad. I mean, it was good to interact. I'm sure that they were happy to see him, right? And, you know, he handed out some T-shirts, and that's cool. But, I mean, this was an open workout, and the guy doesn't work out. Okay, all right.
Well, yeah. How do you not come out and, like, toss? Even if it's 1 minute and you just throw a couple dudes over your head and, like, show off your slams. Like, something.
Just, I mean, he could throw people in his sleep and not even think about it. All right, so he doesn't do that. Okay, then today, just a little bit earlier today, media day, right? Blue corner comes first. Poirier, tons of cameras around him. Everybody's ready to go.
Sat there for 40-something minutes.
40-something minutes, did it, right? Does everything. They do the face-off. Didn't expect a spirited face-off. There's no hate here. This is just, you know.
Khabib hugged him. It was interesting.
That's what we expected, right? I mean, just professionalism. I think there's respect, all right? So, all right, cool. Yep, face-offs are done. Let's go talk to Khabib. And then Dana face-offs are done. We're like, why is Dana still on the stage right now? Like, normally, it's not like he thinks maybe there's another fight to face off. Like, oh, I just didn't even realize.
Surprise main event.
Yeah, yeah. So he sits there, and he goes, guys, Habib, everybody's going to be around. You got plenty of stuff to do. Just know Habib. He did yesterday. He's not doing today. Well, he did yesterday, but he didn't speak to any media yesterday.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So he didn't do media. So Habib didn't do media day today. Interesting. For us, okay, we're spoiled at MMA Junkie. Like, we've had some access to him. We've had, we're good, and we like everybody in the card. Like, we're a hardcore fan base. Like, we can talk to prelim fighters. There's a ton of media that were here for one reason only, and that was to talk to Habib. And I'm not trying to bury Habib here. I like Habib. He's a good dude. He's always been respectful. But it is, I'm sure a lot of reporters went home disappointed today. I say all this to get to the point of, are we worried that something's not right with Habib? Because he is basically – I saw him when I first got here, like Monday or Tuesday. I saw him, and he was nice. Like, I was in the media room. He came in. He was like, hey, John, how are you doing? He's like, where'd you get that coffee? I want some coffee. So, he didn't look bad to me. He didn't look like he was trying to hide anything. But to not do an open workout, to not do a media day, are you guys worried at all?
It's tough because in one – way you could say like it's beneficial in some ways because it like tangles it in more mystery, like what's going on. You want to see the weigh-ins tomorrow, it's going to be like so much more anticipated, all that kind of stuff. So like in one way maybe it's good promotion in a way, but only if you're like following it super closely and someone who's like watching the media
right.
day and like doing all that stuff. And maybe if you were just like a fan looking for his interviews, you wouldn't even know that like he didn't end up doing interviews unless like you follow one of us reporters who tweeted out what happened.
Right.
So like, yeah, you may, there's maybe two sides to that coin of whether that's like an effective approach, but I don't think anyone denies Habib making 155 is like not an easy task. Like
right.
he has missed weight once before, very early in his UFC career. He obviously had the Tony Ferguson fight at UFC 209, I believe, where he was like pulled out at the last minute before weigh-ins and hospitalized. So like there's been issues here time and time again. The past few times it seems like it's been okay for him for these title fights, but. Yeah, like I don't think you can ever go into a Habib fight like 100% certain this is gonna be no big deal. But for this one, like it would shock me if there was a weigh-in issue, just because he's known about this fight forever. He's had like all the advantages in the world. He's aware of like the terrain here, the humidity, all the other things that come along with fighting
right.
here. So like if he can't make weight for this for whatever reason, that's like a huge onus on him, and that's a really bad look because he's had everything in the world like set up on a silver platter to make this a perfect situation.
It is funny because I did like when he didn't talk, I did kind of immediately think, well, that sucks. And I was like, well, it's actually more of a talking point that he didn't talk than anything he would have said,
yeah.
right? You know
right.
what I mean? Like, no disrespect, but he's just going to be there. Oh, it's an honor. It's God's will. He's going to say what he says. So it
yeah.
is more of a talking point. But let me ask you, because we had an interesting setup today because all three of us were working together. You guys were going to talk to Habib. So I was actually leaving after the face-offs anyway so I could get back here and talk to some guest fighters. So I didn't really get to see the fallout after it happened. I was running to get out. Tell me, Fred, like the local reporters, like was – what happened? Like after, because we find out that he's not showing up, and there was a ton of media there today. I think this
yep.
is like 150 media or something. So a lot of people there today, and clearly, again, most of them were there to speak to him. What was it? What was the vibe like?
They just swarmed us, Makhachev. That's okay. what Well, Mike was saying that was a good opportunity for them to for like Osama Zubaydah to get some. He's like, maybe that was his plan. Like, so
you mentioned that earlier, saying like, hey, maybe you know what? I don't think that was Habib's plan. But had he just walked up and been like, guys, thank you all for coming. I look forward to the fight tomorrow. In the meantime, talk to my brothers here.
Yeah.
That would have been
– It is interesting. And, Makhachev did say at the open workouts, he's like, one – like during this 5 years, I'm going to be headlining one of these cards. Like, that's
yeah.
my goal. So I don't think that, like, this is some sort of master plan that they came up with or whatever. But, like, maybe it was. I don't know. But gun to my head, I'm saying no, and Habib's just probably having a tough cut, and instead of sitting there answering questions for an hour, he got to work. And
you know what I think because he's probably just overwhelmed because people are pulling him here and there asking for stuff, and technically I'm sure behind the scenes is being told cater to the local media, right, most importantly, because of basically this event is because of him and for him.
Yeah.
So
it's a partnership. Like, there's a ton of money.
Exactly. They're probably telling him this is your top priority, and he's probably just burnt out. He's probably being like, I talked to you guys a million times. Right. Like, I'll talk to you guys later.
So let me ask you this, because this is one thing that I've kind of been thinking about all week and thought about it beforehand, but now that we're here, like, really think about it. I mean, fights are a fight. Like, once you get in a cage, it's in a cage. But we as reporters, we're always, you know, breaking it down. Well, hey, what outside factor here? And we talked to a lot of fighters, like, hey, is this a pressure situation? You know, and everybody, no, it's not pressure. I mean, they all have – it's a generic question, generic answer. But in this situation, I think this is a little different, right? I mean, this is, as you said, it's an event built around him, right? But it's a partnership built around him. It's this region. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's a lot of weight on his shoulders to go in there and perform. And as you said, imagine, you know, getting pulled in a million different directions. You know, you've got these very, very wealthy individuals, yeah, you know, that have been very, very good to you over the course of your career. And now they're kind of expecting you to get in there and deliver. So, I mean, Habib doesn't seem like the kind of guy to me to, like, get rattled. I mean, we're talking about the guy who had the most gangster move ever of just, you know, getting off the bus after it had been attacked and say, you know, just send me location. I mean, this dude is calm under fire, but this is different. You know, I mean, this isn't just conflict or whatever. I mean, this is like the weight of this partnership and this region and this deal. I mean, do you think there's a possibility that as we're leading into this, that it's weighing heavy on him a little bit?
It could be, or maybe that's why he doesn't want to do the rest of the media, because it's like he doesn't want to weigh heavy on him eventually. Like, he, for him, he knows that future events won't be in Abu Dhabi, or maybe next year, whatever. But I mean, like, after that, he'll be fighting in other areas while he'll sit down and do these media obligations. So he feels probably, or he's probably being told, like, look, cater to the local media, because a lot of these guys don't know much about the actual sport, so they're asking him certain questions about the country and how it feels to be here, and expect him to say all that good stuff. And so there's a goal there, and I don't blame him, because it must be really annoying to get pulled in all these directions. But I just feel like that's what he feels like he's obligated to do.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I mean, again, you know, knock on wood, I'm hoping tomorrow morning at the weigh-ins, no problem, because I want to see this fight. Of course, you know, you don't want anyone to miss weight. I mean, that just sucks. But it's just interesting these last 48 hours, especially. I wonder where he's going to be at. The flip side of it, Mike Bond, let's talk about Dustin Poirier. I mean, man, you know, you first announced this fight, and I think everybody right away, and the line reflects it, right? I mean, Habib's a big favorite. I mean, here's this unbeaten dude that just mows through everybody, right? So I think when you first announce the fight, everybody goes, wow, good for Dustin, but man, Habib's a beast, right?
Yep.
But I get this feeling, as we get closer, and again, we're not talking about X's and O's right now. We're talking about emotions and intangibles and all that. But, dude, I I've said it over the years, and I'll echo it. You can tell when somebody's trying to hype themselves up. You can tell when somebody is trying to make themselves believe something, and then you can tell when somebody actually has that core belief, you know? You have been staying in touch with Dustin Poirier every week. We had the Dustin's Diary series. If anybody hasn't seen it, still available on MMA Junkie every segment. Basically, kind of a weekly check-in. There's a video component where he's been sharing clips about his life. There's a written segment as well where it goes a little bit more in-depth, a little storytelling, and then it all culminated with last night. We went to his villa that he's staying in, not staying here in the little hotel area we are. He was kind enough to bring us in on Wednesday night of fight week, and you guys had one final interview. Mm-hmm. And yes, I think for you especially, and even for me now, I mean, when you're that close, you're going to feel it, right?
Yeah.
But I don't feel like the feeling of this momentum that Dustin is carrying, that there's some kind of something special, something magical going on. I don't think it's coming just from you or just from me. I talk to people, and I guess a little tip. I mean, Matt Erickson was sharing earlier that the staff picks is, I think he said, what, 9-5?
Yeah.
In favor of
Poirier.
That's insane.
Yeah.
9-5 in favor, even though the line is still minus 500. So yep. 9 of our 14, and I'm one of them. And I'll be honest, I changed mine. I changed my pick. Originally, I was thinking Habib. But as we get closer, and I'm thinking about it, feels like this magic that Dustin's having. It feels like the weight of the world on Habib. These things. Now, again, then we could go out on Saturday night and Habib could just throw him to the ground and sit on top of him for 25 minutes. But I changed my pick. So, I mean, give me a feeling of kind of what you've seen and why. Because, again, like I said, I don't think it's just me and you. I don't think it's just the people on the ground. I don't even think it's just our staff because maybe they saw so much of Dustin. I get the feeling in the MMA community, they're like, maybe this dude is onto something. And if you haven't read Dan Tom's breakdown, by the way, Dan Tom's breakdown was phenomenal yep. about why it isn't just like a hope and a prayer, but that, you know, listen, Dustin's defensive wrestling is better than you give him credit for. He's only been taken down a handful of times, you know, throughout his time as a UFC lightweight. Habib does set a torrid pace to start out with, but he has to slow down at some point because he just can't keep that pace. Meanwhile, Dustin is a guy that may start a little bit slow, but will get going late. So, I mean, it's a great, great breakdown from Dan Tom. Dan Tom ended up siding with Dustin Poirier as well. So just give me an idea what it's like talking to him every week and just this feeling of this groundswell, I think, of support that are saying – maybe Poirier's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, from day one, he's just, like, he has that type of confidence that doesn't come across as arrogance, too. Like, he just literally believes in himself. I mean, this guy's been doing it for a long time. I watched Fightville on the plane ride because we had hours and hours to kill flying over here from coming from the trip to Toronto. It was something like 16 hours, so I had to do something on the plane. I rewatched it because I hadn't seen it in a few years, and, like, he's had the same mentality kind of from day one when he's fighting dudes in, like, fairgrounds when it's literally being, like, the cage and the entire area is being set up by prison inmates and stuff. Like, yeah. It's just craziness. But he's always kind of had that same approach. Like, I'm going to be really good at this. Like, you know, I fight for my family. Like, this is what I know best. And, like, he's been doing this for a really long time. I think this is, like, his 40th professional fight or something like that, professional slash amateur. Like, he knows what he's doing in there, and he's at an amazing camp. Like, we could sit here for hours and talk about everything that American Top Team has achieved over the years. He has, if he wins this fight, Mike Brown, like, bow to this man, because he's just, like, the coach, the GOAT coach, I feel like,
right.
of all time. I mean, if he can help Dustin pull this off, my God. But he has all the right people. I mean, he's working with Colby Covington's in the gym. Like, he has Sydney Outlaw, who's an amazing wrestler, who was the person who helped Jorge Masvidal prepare for Ben Askren. Obviously, he didn't need to use too much of that, but, you know, maybe Dustin comes out with a flying knee, and that's the initial open. Who knows?
Right.
Anyways, yeah, he just has that mentality that he just really knows that he, like, who he is. And I think more so over the years, like, we can talk about, you know, the Conor fights and, like, the fights that he's lost and, like, these big moments, but I think he's kind of a different person now, and he's learned what those meant for him. And, you know, not to mention the fact that he's fighting at his proper weight class of 155, that's just helped him, like, fill out a lot more. And he's strong. Like, I don't think he's gonna get ragdolled. You look at some of the dudes Habib has been fighting, like, I don't think they have just that natural strength. Like, yes, Edson Barboza is shredded, Connor is in good shape, but, like, they just don't have that natural power just from a physical perspective. And I think he just has a very well-rounded skill set, and he knows what he does right and what he does wrong. The only thing that I do worry about is, like, talking to him so much through this camp. He's been saying, like, how it's been the most taxing camp of his life just because the preparation for all the wrestling and everything. And that's what you have to do. But there's a very fine balance of, like, how much do you focus on what the other guy is going to try to do and where he's best, and are you neglecting what you're best at and working on, you know, the things that make you a great fighter? So you just wonder if you go in there and you're overthinking the takedowns and all those kind of things. Like, who knows, man? We haven't seen Habib fight that much in the past few years
right.
at the end of the day. So, like, maybe just the long layoff, the fact that maybe there's not a full appreciation of how good Conor McGregor is or just the way that fight went, that you just, like, don't get a full understanding of how good Habib is, and maybe he just comes out and completely reminds us. But I think Dustin has as good of a chance as anyone. He's super well-rounded, you know, black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's got, you know, he's only had, I think, 11 fights in the UFC at lightweight, and he already has the second most knockouts in the history of the division.
Crazy.
So, like, he, you know, he's done very well in this division. And I think, you know, win or lose, it's going to be a good performance for him, and I do not expect him to get blown out of the water. I don't expect him to quit. He's going to hang in there tooth and nail for every moment, whether it's going his way or not.
I know Conor McGregor says a lot of things, but that was one thing that I actually did like that Conor said after that fight, was like, I focus too much on defense. And I think that's it's a natural trap to fall into with Habib, right? Because you know you're going to be facing it. But if you're just worried about wrestling defense, like, where does the counterattack come and that sort of thing? But so I'm keyed up for this fight. Here's the thing. I know you went with Dustin as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a moment if Habib comes out in 5 seconds, picks him up, slams him to the floor, leg ride is set up instantly, like, do you panic then, or does it – you know, in round two or round three? Like, when do you go, oh, God, this is not going to be his night?
Yeah, I think it's probably, like, I guess it just depends on, like, how much damage he absorbs while he's on bottom, if he's able to protect himself. I heard, it wasn't our interview, but I think it was an interview you did with ESPN with Brett Okamoto today, just, like, a little social clip I saw on Twitter, being like, I just need to keep that locked in focus for all 25 minutes. If I get picked up and slammed to the ground, and then I get up, and then he takes me down again, and then I get up and he takes me down again, I can't, like, be frustrated or be like, you know, do something stupid or throw it out the window. I think he's, like, prepared for all scenarios and how this is going to go, and I ultimately think he's the more dangerous fighter. He has the more ways of finishing this fight. I think he could submit Khabib. He could knock him out. Like, he is more, I guess, well-rounded. I mean, his striking is definitely better, so he's more right. well-rounded in that sense, but Khabib's just a true specialist. He's so good at doing what he does. But yeah, once you get in that stage, it's like, oh, he's lost two rounds and then three rounds, like, oh, he needs to finish this fight to win. Then yeah, you start getting worried, and of course in those fourth and fifth rounds you're more tired and all that kind of stuff. So I mean, it's just fascinating a fight as it gets. I think the minus 500 for Khabib, like, is kind of crazy to me, but maybe the public just, you know, feels that certain way about it.
Right, riding high on the Conor. I mean, his profile's never been higher. I think that's a big part of it. I haven't seen your pick. Who did you end up?
I went with Poirier as well. It was funny because they asked me in local media yesterday who my pick was.
What'd you tell him? You didn't.
I didn't know. You went with Khabib. No, I didn't go with Khabib. I just didn't give a prediction. I broke down the fight. but yeah, like, the reason I picked Poirier, I thought about this a lot. I submitted my pick pretty late, but it's because Poirier is, like, battle tested. He's gone five rounds. He has late finishes. There were stints in fights with Gaethje and Barbosa where you felt Gaethje and Alvarez where you felt like the tide was going to turn when in Poirier's body language, and then he turned it around.
Right.
So I like that. When I saw that, I'm like, okay, like, he's obviously faced adversity in fights. He doesn't quit. Even if there are moments in the fight where you feel like, oh, all right, he's going to get finished here. There were these awkward moments in the Alvarez fight and also in the Gaethje fight where he's taken a lot of damage in those fights, managed to turn it around and win the fight or finish the fight.
Right.
So that was impressive for me, because when you looked at the last fight with Conor, it's like, if Conor doesn't get the knockout early, he's going to get tired. And it's like, you kind of knew what was going to happen if that was the case. But with Poirier, it's like, and I don't think Khabib's underestimating Poirier in that regard either. I think he knows. So that's the interesting thing for me, is I don't think that he's fought somebody that is as battle tested as Dustin in that regard. And that's probably why I was leaning towards Poirier, because I'm like, he's actually still dangerous throughout the whole fight. Obviously, the goal for him is to try not to get dominated, no 10-8 rounds early and stuff, because then that makes it really difficult in terms of trying to get the finish late.
It's crazy, man. I can't believe all three of us are going Poirier. But and what's crazy is that, because everything you're saying is accurate. Everything you're saying is accurate. Like, it's 100% true. I echo it 100%. And at the same time, Khabib could go out there and just absolutely steamroll him on Saturday night, and I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, it's crazy. And one, I mean, kind of going off track a little bit, one element that does stand out to me about this fight and the next pay-per-view as well, like, the interim title thing, we were giving so much crap about these. Like, that was a smooth transition right into this fight. You know, granted, no one got hurt. There was no, like, weird stuff, but, you know, Israel Adesanya got his interim belt. He's fighting Whitaker. Dustin Poirier got his. He's fighting Khabib.
At least we're doing it right.
They're going to be now partners in the pay-per-view. Dustin told us that yesterday in the interview as well. So, like, this is going to be, you know, financially life-changing for him, I think, win or lose. I think the pay-per-view is going to do decent enough. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's, I guess, that little caveat in the side that you must note that.
I like the way he said it, by the way. I like the way he said it, too. He didn't just say, I'm getting points. He's like, I'm a pay-per-view partner for the first time. I'm like, whoa, look at you.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, hopefully, I mean, I'm not a fan of interim titles as long as we can avoid them, but I think in this circumstance it was the right move given Khabib's suspension, and we made it happen. So
I dig it. I'm keyed up now, man. I'm ready to go. All right, let's do this. You had a lengthy sit-down interview with Dustin Poirier, and I figured let's bring that to the masses. If anybody hadn't had a chance to check out the video, they can kick it here in audio form. So this is Mike Bond's conversation last night with the Diamond, Dustin Poirier.
So, Dustin, here we are, man. It's been a long journey to get here, literally, and in terms of travel time, we're a long way from Lafayette, Louisiana. But just first talk about coming over here, long journey for you. What do you think about, like, on the plane ride and stuff? Those are long hours where you're just kind of sitting by yourself. Are you thinking all about the fight? Are you watching movies? What are you doing?
Yeah, I think it was 21 hours total time, including a three-hour layover in London.
Yeah,
I watch movies. Think about the fight sometimes, try to take a nap, just try to stay calm and chill out.
Yeah, definitely. And it's nice to have, I'm sure, your team around you and whatnot, and you land and kind of get a hero's welcome. I mean, was that even anything beyond what you could have imagined? Just like, you know, there's banners for you, there's people, you know, teaching you how to dance, just really welcoming you into the culture.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. I've been saying it all week. I've fought all over, and I've never had a reception like that. Getting off the airplane, I didn't even have to go through customs. The Abu Dhabi Board of Entertainment or came get me from my plane, walked me through back way. I went to VIP arrival. It was nuts, man. I was treated like I was a king or something.
Yeah. What was, like, those dance moves that they were teaching and stuff? Like, was that a little uncomfortable for you, or are you just, like, enjoying it?
Yeah, nah, because they kind of pushed me into it.
Right.
And then I was in arms with the guys, and then they started dancing. I was like, I'm just going to go with the flow. Let's dance it up.
Yeah, and I mean, you've been obviously hanging around here a few extra days and stuff. You came in before fight week officially started, but today you kind of got your first true look at open workouts in front of the crowd and everything. How'd that go relative to your expectations? There was a pretty nice crowd there at the Yaz Mall. It seems like you got a little bit of a mixed reaction, but what was your takeaway from that?
I felt like there was more supporters than people booing me and stuff. You know, right when I walked in, there was a few Khabib fans with a banner to the left, and I can hear them booing and stuff. But other than that, you know, I heard a lot of people cheering, and I think they're just excited to see a good fight.
Yeah, no, and so you don't feel like anymore. I know you're originally saying, like, enemy territory, all those things. It doesn't really feel that way so much anymore, right?
No, it's not that I thought I was going to walk off the plane and it was going to be, I have to be careful everywhere, look around the corner. I thought I was going to be in enemy territory, and it's not that at all. Like I said, this is the best place I've come to and been received so well. Everybody's been nice. You know, the service everywhere I go is incredible.
Yeah.
The city's beautiful. It's been an amazing trip.
Yeah. Does that just help you be more relaxed, like, throughout the process of fight week? I mean, obviously it's all the, you know, the night of the fight, but just leading up, I'm sure it takes a little bit more off your shoulders.
Yeah. You know, fighting is stressful. So if the week goes smooth, everything's clicking, it just makes it that much easier.
Yeah, and it sounds like your weight has been, you know, from when we've been talking throughout camp, it's, you know, you came in, I think you said 3 pounds heavier than when you started the last camp, but it's been working its way down. And talking to all your coaches and everyone around you, they're saying this is the best shape you've been in your life, the most prepared you've been. How can you really, like, physically gauge that? Like, why, you know, how you're in the best shape? Do you just, is it a feeling? Is it, you know, the numbers that you see in terms of, like, what you're producing in training?
The way I feel, obviously resting heart rate is a good indicator of cardiovascular shape, and I'm at the lowest I've ever been in my career because I usually track that type of stuff.
Yeah.
My weight's great. I did extra stuff to get that down because I knew we'd be coming here, and I knew the fight was going to be taxing. I didn't want to cut up too much weight when I was out here. Mm-hmm. So everything's going smooth. Working with George Lockhart, you know, we brought nutritionist chef Eric Pena with us, part of George Lockhart's team, and he's been making my meals all fight week. Usually I do my own thing, and it's been great, man. Everything's perfect.
Yeah, what kind of stuff are you eating, like, this close to the fight?
I just ate a piece of salmon with some beets, a couple slices of orange. Right now we're cutting carbs out, obviously, but fats and proteins right now.
Yeah, what do you do post weigh-in? Do you have, like, something that you like to eat, or do you kind of still keep it very clean after weighing in, just because you have to fight the next day, obviously?
I've been on a 10-week diet, so it's tough to not grab something here and there after weigh-ins before the fight. But I try my best to keep it clean. Keep it clean and healthy in the pure ingredients, you know, nothing processed, really simple stuff.
Yeah. Do you feel like, obviously, you know, you're not training super hard this last week or so, but you've talked about how grueling the camp was, you know, all those days of wrestling and just preparing for the style that you're going to face. Like, do you feel now at this point, though, like, very fresh going into the fight despite having that grueling camp?
Yeah. Fight week, I've been like this my whole career. I don't do a lot of crazy training on fight week. I like, some guys like to do intense stuff. I'll roll around light, hit pads, break sweats here and there, and that's all I do. I don't push it too crazy. I'll go for a morning run, you know, depending on where my weight's at and stuff. But this week is the week to heal. I've been grinding for 10 straight weeks. Mm-hmm. This is to let my body heal and come together and be the best.
Yeah, and talking about a little bit about the actual fight with Khabib, you know, everyone kind of asks you about the undefeated fighter and, you know, everything you've been through and stuff. But going into this, like, he hasn't faced a ton of adversity in his fights, really, like moments he's had to come back through in the actual fights. There's, you know, maybe Michael Johnson landed some nice straight punches, Edson Barboza landed like a nice spinning kick and stuff. But how important, you know, how do you think he's going to react in those moments when you have to put him in some adversity? I know there's a lot of guesswork that goes into fighting and you don't really know exactly, but how do you kind of feel about it?
I think he's going to be tough and grind through. If he hits adversity, he's going to keep pushing forward. Seems like that kind of guy, but, you know, until we see it happen or until he's put in that position, it's tough to say. I really don't know. But the plan is to put him in those positions.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think has more pressure going into this fight? I mean, you've had such a long road to this fight, you know, the second longest road to a title unifier, undisputed title fight in UFC history behind Michael Bisping. He's, you know, fighting here at home, you know, has his father in his corner for the first time in the UFC career. Kind of this event more or less is built around him in a lot of ways for this market. Do you think there's more pressure on him to kind of perform than you, who've obviously, you know, had a really long road to this opportunity?
I always put a lot of pressure on myself, but he probably has more pressure to perform. Everybody's counting me out, right? I can only do better than what they think. You know, I'm not, so they're holding him to such a high standard. He has to go out there and dominate me, right? Or he's going to do less than everybody expects him to do. Right. So I think he probably has more pressure coming into that.
Yeah, fair enough. And you've said in a few interviews, like in the past few days, if you win this fight, you feel you're the best lightweight ever. When did this idea pop into your head? Because I hadn't heard you really express that until just very, very recently.
Just the run I'm on right now. You know, if I go out there and stop Khabib, that's the current featherweight champ, the current lightweight champ, beat them both back to back. Then look at the other champs I beat: Pettis, Eddie, Gaethje. I mean, that's a lot of champions in a row. And the perseverance I've had to show to get to this point, to even have this opportunity, I think is a part of that story of being the best.
Mm-hmm. You have, that reminds me, the word perseverance. Since November 12th, 2016, you've had that tweet posted on your profile, you know, pinned up there. It's all about perseverance, and you've kept it up there for years at this point. How much does that depict kind of your attitude and everything you've been through? I know you've talked a lot about, you know, you have 25 minutes to make life fair and everything, but is that something you just keep up there to remind yourself of maybe the lows you've experienced or anything like that?
Yeah, doesn't just matter to fighting. That's anything. You just got to keep chipping away, stay true to the path, like I've always said, and mm-hmm. have self-belief, and you can make, you know, pretty much anything happen if you just keep pushing forward. And that's what fighting is, and then that's what a lot of things in life, accomplishing great things, is that just mm-hmm. consistency and persevering through bad times. And you know, I'm gonna have to do that Saturday night. You know, adversity's probably going to present itself to me once again in a fight, and I'm going to have to persevere through that, get to the next round, and dig deep. You know, I know it's probably going to be that type of fight with Khabib, but I'm prepared for that, and I'm ready for that.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, you do everything right. You carry yourself very well. You do the stuff outside the cage with the charity and everything. It seems like you win this fight, you're going to be a very model champion for the UFC. I'm curious what you think about Khabib. I haven't really ever heard you talk about, you know, the brawl and stuff, everything that happened after the Conor fight. Do you think he carries himself like that, he's been a good champion for the UFC, that he's, you know, conducted himself more or less like he should?
First off, I'm happy to be painted in that light, but I'm a man and do dumb stuff all the time and say dumb stuff, and, you know, I'm not perfect by far, but I'm just trying to use my platform for the good and, you know, just be a good person. It just feels good. It feels right, you know, but I don't want to paint myself in that picture, the perfect champ. I'm just a guy chasing dreams and trying to help other people out along the way. Khabib seems very respectful. I mean, mm-hmm. getting into the fight after the Conor match, I don't judge his personality just by that moment. Right. You know, so far I think he's been very respectful in the build up to this fight with me. I never see him really bad mouthing people leading up to other fights. Other than that, I don't know him personally. I don't really read a lot of news about him or what's going on in his personal life. I don't know.
Right, for sure. And I mean, you are doing a lot of very good stuff outside the cage as well. Maybe for people who aren't following it super closely, can you just remind them exactly what you're doing for this fight with the Good Fight Foundation and working with Justin Wren and Fight for the Forgotten?
Yeah, me and Justin Wren, our charities are teaming up, and we're building a solar-powered well for the Pygmy people in Uganda. They recently had a really bad flood, and it ruined their water system at an orphanage and school there. So we set a goal. You can donate at thegoodfightgroup.com or Fight for the Forgotten. And we're going to also build a water tower. So this is the first time my charity has gone outside of the U.S., and first time it's gone outside of Louisiana. And I knew this was a big fight, and I had an even bigger platform to use, so we wanted to try to do the biggest things we could, and this kind of came together really smoothly with Justin. My wife reached out to him, and he said, and just let us know recently they had a flood that ruined the water supply, and I knew right away. I said, okay, we're gonna run with this, let's do it, let's make this happen. And it just felt, when it feels right and things just sync together smoothly, that's how I know it's the right thing we're doing.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I'm sure furthering your own financial situation will help, you know, build this even bigger. And I'm curious, you told me a few fights ago that you had signed the new UFC contract that had championship language in it, and then you got the interim title, which, you know, Dana had said that kind of brings you into the fold a little bit in terms of, you know, getting the championship pay, without going, you know, too much into details. But is this fight, the payday that it's going to bring, is that going to be, you know, a life-changing thing for you, your wife, your daughter, all those things?
It just depends on how the pay-per-view does.
Right.
You know, this is my first fight being a pay-per-view partner with the UFC. I see some articles saying that it's trending to do very well. You know, for my sake, I hope it does, obviously. But yeah, we'll see when the pay-per-view numbers come in.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mentioned Jolie quickly there. It's your guys' 10-year anniversary today.
Today.
Wedding anniversary. I mean, does that, I know she's not here yet for the fight, but she will be soon. Does that make you, you know, step back a little bit and kind of reflect on the bigger picture of, you know, everything you've been through and your guys' journey together?
For sure. She landed in Dubai last night. She was texting me. She texted me today. She's going to drive here tomorrow. She's with family in Dubai for the day. Mm-hmm. And it's just so far away from where we came from, you know, to be spending my 10-year wedding anniversary in Abu Dhabi is just like, I couldn't have thought that, you know, I couldn't have dreamed that whenever I was a young kid, you know, 19 or 20, getting married. It's crazy, man. It's a dream. I'm living it up.
Yeah, and I was watching Fightville again recently, just, you know, in preparation for this week and everything. How often do you sit back and kind of reflect on, you know, where you've come from since then to where you are now? And is it, you know, maybe tough to do that sometimes because you need to focus on the now and you obviously have so much more ahead of you that you want to do too?
Yeah, I, you know, I've been in a lot of big fights, and that movie Fightville captured a chunk of my end of my amateur career and beginning of my pro career. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome to have that, but I don't even talk about it that much. You know, a lot of people don't even know about the film. Newer fans don't know about the film. I've probably seen it once in the last 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Maybe after this one, after I knock Khabib out, I'll go home and watch it. It'll be that much sweeter, man.
Yeah, so that's we can end it very shortly here, but that's kind of how you're feeling this fight's gonna go. Do you sense a knockout there? You're actually tied for the second most knockouts in the history of the lightweight division, so if you do knock him out, you'll be number one on that list now.
That's great, because my UFC career was half spent at featherweight,
right?
You know, and I have a few knockouts there, so I would be on top of that list. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be great, another record added to the strap.
Yeah, is that the most likely way? I know one of your coaches had mentioned he had a dream that you submitted him, but do you feel like when you watch it play out, is the knockout something you kind of see more?
I don't know. I just feel I'm going to finish him, you know. I think I can submit him, and I think I can knock him out. It just depends how the fight unfolds and what mistakes he makes.
Awesome. Well, we're really looking forward to it, Dustin. I really appreciate you taking the time and kind of the special environment here. You got a really cool villa and everything to help you prepare for this fight. And actually, one last thing I did want to ask, why do you not spend the fight weeks in the fighter hotel and kind of decide to do your own thing here?
Because when I was younger with the UFC, I used to spend fight week in the fighter hotel and get moved around and schooled around by the UFC and in the transport they set up and stuff. But I just felt like I was being part of a system with that, you know. Right. I just wanted to get away from the fighters and the fans hanging out at the hotel and do my own thing like I do every day. So we rent a car and do my own thing, show up to the the places UFC needs us for open workouts or media interviews, whatever they send me my itinerary, I show up to those things and that's it. You know, I don't need to be schooled around and brought to the grocery store. At a point in my career when I couldn't, you know, afford to like rent a Airbnb or rent a car when I was fighting, you know, obviously I didn't. But at this point, I like to be away from it.
Yeah, and just last thing, you mentioned so many times about visualizing this moment, making it happen. What's the thing once you win this fight on Saturday that you are most excited for, or you most look forward for? Is it to, you know, say to Jolie that, you know, that promise is completely fulfilled now that I'm going to be a world champion? Is it to go home to Parker? What's the thing that, you know, makes you most excited?
Just to get all the way to the pinnacle, you know, because there's always going to be people saying, I did it. I'm a world champion. You know, I checked that box. This fight is about starting a legacy. It's about doing something that's never been done, being the first to climb that mountain, and just being great. You know, I have an opportunity to be great, do something that's never been done in a place that's far away and built for this event. It just feels really special to me, you know, but when I get back home to my daughter, we're going to the zoo. I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Excited. Thank you so much for the time, Dustin. Now we're looking forward to Saturday. Thank you.
All right, that was Dustin the Diamond Poirier taking Khabib Nurmagomedov in the main event, UFC 242. And you know what? If you're as keyed up as we are, you might as well get a little fantasy action. DraftKings.com, taking care of the MMA Roadshow this week. You want to have a little fun? Do it. The wait is finally over. Two of the top names in MMA are finally facing off as the lightweight champ takes on his toughest opponent yet. DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the middle of the biggest fight of the year with a contest that has over $200,000 up for grabs. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. I always tell people, just having a dollar on the line makes fights a little bit more interesting. Maybe you don't necessarily know a whole lot about the fighters involved, but you can put a little team together, make a little money on the side. It makes things kind of interesting through the night. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than with DraftKings. And if you're listening to The Roadshow, you're probably hardcore MMA, so you might as well try to make a little money off it. Nothing makes fight night more exciting than when you have DraftKings lineup on the line. Plus, all new and existing users, even if you already have an account, this isn't one of those things where, you know, they give you like the Sunday ticket for free with DirecTV for the first year, but if you're already there, you get screwed. No. Existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500. So download the app or go to DraftKings.com now. Use the promo code ROAD, that's ROAD, like the Road Show, and sign up to compete for over $200,000 in prizes. And don't forget, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's promo code ROAD. Sign up and claim your deposit up to $500 only at DraftKings. Minimum of a $5 deposit required, and the deposit bonus does require a 25-time playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. That's how you do a read, Mike Bonner.
That was smooth, my friend. That was
smooth. Professional, man. That's how we do it. That's why the top sponsors come to the MMA Roadshow, because they want that John Morgan read. All right. No doubt about it, man. This is I don't want to call it a one-fight card. I mean, but that's the big focus. It isn't two title fights. But let's talk about this main card real quick. Edson Barbosa versus Paul Felder, of course. That's a very, very intriguing rematch there. Probably I won't say a totally different fight than the first time around, because their styles, I mean, they are who they are. It's going to be exciting, no question about it. But, you know, certainly different fighters at this time around, especially for Felder, who was green. Give me your thoughts on that one, guys. I mean, all action, right? It's got to be. There's no way that fight's going to suck.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Barbosa. He was saying if that was like if our last one was fighting, and I just wait until Saturday. So he's expecting another war. He's been in a few wars himself, and so is Felder. So I feel like this matchup on paper just can't go wrong. I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like it can't go wrong.
We're totally jinxing it.
Yeah, so it's just one of those fights where I feel like they're just going to stand in the middle and throw.
Should be a lot of fun. Let's talk about what we've seen this week, okay? Because here's the interesting part, too. Stylistically, we know I don't think there's going to be any real surprises, I mean, in what they bring to the table, right? But I think as a whole, all of us were a little bit underwhelmed by Edson Barbosa's workout yesterday, that maybe he was a little sluggish, maybe a little, disinterested, a little lethargic maybe. At Media Day today as well, I think, you know, some people were saying, oh, he didn't really seem it. Meanwhile, you got Paul Felder, who
is fire.
Well, yeah, he's on fire. I mean, he's great. I mean, he's amazing on the mic. You know, he was having a good workout. He was dropping, you know, his speech afterwards. He was giving great lines. But you do always wonder with him, or at least I do. You know, not that he's half in the game. I mean, it's not like he's like fighting and then, I don't know, chasing some completely different career. I mean, his other career of broadcasting is still being involved with fighting every day, breaking down fights. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in some ways you could say maybe it helps his game, maybe it helps his knowledge. But on the other hand, it is a distraction from that person who is literally spending all day, every day, just getting ready for fights. So, I don't know, are there question marks to you guys around Paul Felder? Are there question marks around Edson Barbosa? I mean, what did you take after seeing him and talking to him both this week?
I think more so, I mean, first of all, would you believe that Edson Barbosa is 2.5 years younger than Paul Felder?
That is crazy.
That kind of blows my mind.
That's insane.
How long he's been around. But I did have the chance to speak to, you know, our good friend and the friend of the podcast, Alex Davis, who, of course, is Edson Barbosa's manager. And he said that, you know, granted the Justin Gaethje fight did not go his way, and he kind of got lured into exactly what he said he wasn't going to do with Justin Gaethje, which, you know, happens from time to time. But he feels, you know, that was, I believe, his first camp at American Top Team for that fight, and he feels like this one, like, it really clicked for him, just working with the coaches and the training partners and everything, and he feels like this is probably going to, you know, bring out Edson's best. And Edson said, you know, I'm going to be my best version ever, which of course is like very typical pre-fight talk.
Training camp, right? Feeling good.
Yeah, stuff like that. But, you know, there could be some stuff to it. He had another child come, you know, the night of the loss to Justin Gaethje. I remember you know, seeing him in the hotel at like 3 a.m. and he had to change his flight just to get home because his wife was in labor, like craziness. So he probably has that motivation. He has the confidence of knowing he already beat this guy once before. So, like, I think this is an important fight for Edson Barbosa. He loses. He's 1-4 in his past five, which, it's say crazy. Whatever you want about the competition, like, at some point you got to keep winning, or you got to get a win here and there. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, Paul Felder is just, he's a very interesting character in the game. I think he knows that, like, he kind of has one run left in him here, and he's not going to, like, stick around too long and, you know, just be doing that thing, like, taking fights for no reason. I feel like he needs a purpose in his career, and that's kind of what he's trying to move forward with. So I'm curious to see how that one plays out. You know, rematches years later are always kind of fascinating. And I feel like, in a way, this is trying to set up Paul Felder to get the win, kind of move up there a little bit. We know he's a friend of the UFC family there. So, you know, to me, if you, like, told me just randomly this fight's happening on this card, you wouldn't think this is a co-main event pay-per-view fight.
Right.
Like, it's just, it doesn't really fit that mold. But, you know, you kind of want to showcase Paul Felder a little bit, give him the chance to redeem a loss and all that. So I think it's all set up for Paul to make something happen here. But Edson Barbosa is always going to be dangerous. That guy can, you know, spin and kick you or land a crazy flying knee at any moment.
I ended up going with Edson Barbosa, and but I'm a little worried with my pick right now.
Yeah,
but
Paul, it feels like a toss up.
It does. Paul's become such an amazing interview too, though, man. He inspires you a little bit. He seemed great at the workout. You have strong feelings one way or another on this one?
I picked Felder, but I just feel like there are different points in their career. Like, Felder's won 3 of his last 4. Barbosa's lost 3 of his last 4. Felder's super motivated to get this one back. I mean, he said you could see how fired up he was at the open workouts.
Yeah.
And for him to be able to avenge a loss that was early in his career, I believe he stepped in on short notice, third fight in the UFC, to do it on a pay-per-view card with Khabib headlining, co-main event, it's got to feel like super special for him. Whereas Barbosa's been in bigger fights before, so he may not be enamored, or like, this might not be that glamorous for him.
Right.
This event, I feel like Paul Felder's like kind of taking the moment in more. So when you look at those things, that's probably why I'm leaning Felder. But Barbosa's so dangerous. Like, we saw what he did to Dan Hooker, who's really, really good, by
the way.
Like, the fact that Dan Hooker was able to bounce back, like, that kind of just shows you how good he is. He's one of the more underrated lightweights. So Barbosa's always dangerous. He can finish you at any time in any way. So I feel like, you know, he's not one to be underestimated. If you go by on paper record and what's gone on with him the past couple of fights, then I'm probably leaning Felder, just because I just feel like, I don't know, it's just a feeling, but I feel like he's a lot more motivated and to get this one back.
All right, top two fights have definitely got the most attention on anything. But I want to just point out something a little bit. Now, the main card, it doesn't immediately scream like, oh, star-studded lineup.
Yeah.
But I'm actually pretty excited about this. Islam Makhachev versus Davi Hamos. I'm a huge Davi Hamos guy. Like, I think this dude is legit. I think people have been sleeping on him. Probably, I mean, he's not a big talker or anything, but just – And of course, Makhachev has been the guy that everybody's been wanting for. So the stylistic matchup between these two, I think, is phenomenal. I think these are top-tier guys that are trying to break through that next level. And the way their styles match up in terms of wrestling versus jiu-jitsu, I think it's great. Curtis Blaydes, love Curtis. I will say Shabil Abdurakhimov, that would be the one name on the main card that I'm not the most excited about. I'm just being, no disrespect to Shabil Abdurakhimov, but he doesn't have the most exciting style in the world. He definitely doesn't have the most exciting interviews in the world.
He's on the longest active winning streak in the UFC heavyweight division right
that
now.
Is insane.
Three fights after Daniel Cormier lost.
That is ridiculous. So I'm not as fired up about that one, but Makhachev Hamos I'm fired up about, and you mentioned earlier, like, visa issues and things like that. Yeah. Merabek Taisimov being on a pay-per-view. Guy is so legit. I love Merabek Taisimov, but Diego Vejeda, you know, he's got the Fortis MMA connections, and he's a fun fighter as well. Like, when he's on, he's tough to deal with. So I will say, if you're sleeping on the main card, I love Makhachev Hamos, and I love Vejeda Taisimov. I think these are going to be good fights. You guys, those three main card matchups, are you – one you're most excited about, or one name that stands out to you?
I feel like Taisimov, because a lot of people have been asking about him. He had that USADA issue and then the visa issues, and a lot of people felt like he should get a ranked opponent. But Diego Ferreira is that kind of one of those guys that he's unranked, but he's dangerous. So it's like one of those fights where you feel like Diego has more to gain than Merabek does, just because I don't think people have forgotten about Merabek. That's the thing. Like, they keep bringing him up again and again. He's on a 6-fight win streak, I believe, 5 knockouts. So, he's an exciting fighter for sure. And I just feel like, I mean, he said it, I believe, that this after this fight, it's like a ranked opponent for him next. And he's hoping to get the visa issues resolved.
That dude is dangerous. I've been on that train for a while, but it's just been so hard to get going because he's fighting once a year or whatever, and it's always an overseas card because he can't come and say something.
And that's the issue with the matchmaking. Like, you know, they have, and, you know, maybe this is unfair or whatever, but because he's on a 6-fight winning streak, but if you're the matchmakers and you're trying to build a division and build up contenders, why are you sacrificing a top 15 guy who could potentially lose to someone who may not fight for another full year or may never be able to get to the United States to fight? Like, there is kind of things that go on behind the scenes into the thinking that, like, you know, this is just
how do we build this guy that we can't take advantage of?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the problem. And
that sounds really bad.
Right. But
we can't utilize them in the proper way.
100%. And you just wonder too with him. I mean, I know he's still a young guy, but I think it's one fight a year since 2015.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, that window is going to close on him, and you just wonder, like, is this a guy who either missed it, like him hitting his full potential, or it's never going to happen because these issues are going to persist, and that's a bit of a bummer. But yeah, anytime we do get to see him compete, it's great stuff, but it just doesn't happen as often as we'd like.
And Makhachev, again, like a guy that had been heavily hyped, he had a tough test last time out. So I think this is a big kind of proving moment for him. And as I think you mentioned earlier, Mike, that, you know, he wants to headline an event at some point during this partnership. I mean, this is a moment for him to kind of to break out, but it's a tough fight for him.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing, because, like, his last fight as well against Armin, like, that's a tough guy.
Yep.
And he's got that win now over Olivier Aubin-Mercier, so he's good. But I don't think people got the opportunity to see how good like his performance, even though he lost.
Right.
But that's the risky thing for Islam as well. He's taking on Davi Hamos, who is legit, but not a lot of people know about him.
Yep.
So if he loses that fight, it sets him way back.
Yep.
Where Davi Hamos, it sets him way up. So he's got a lot to lose in this fight. And I'm wondering if the matchmaking, because on paper the fights are great, but when you look at them, it's like it's not really an easy win for them. We're trying to push them. But at the same time, they're fighting guys that are relatively unknown to them, like MMA fans that don't know the sport very well. So it is a dangerous fight for him to take. And he's been getting a lot of attention, obviously, because he trains with Habib and he's on the card with Habib. So it'll be interesting. If he wins, it's great for him, because he's getting a lot of media attention as well. If he doesn't, I feel like it sets him back a lot. So it's a pretty risky fight.
It does. I'm telling you, the main guard, I think we're going to be in for some good fights. All right, we'll step away real briefly. I talked to you guys. I was speaking to guest fighters today. They are very impressed. Again, just showing you the support that the UFC is dealing for this partnership.
Yeah.
Man, the guest fighters that are here
is
insane. I mean, top-level talent. Like, and there's 8 guest fighters. Normally, it's like 2 or 3. And they're all like champions or contenders. It's insane. I had a chance to speak to one of them, and that was Kelvin Gastelum. Of course, he just got the fight announced with Darren Till, and I hadn't had a chance to speak with him since then. So kind of got his thoughts on the matchup and what it's like to come back after that battle. You know, it's funny, and we get into it right away, but, you know, Adesanya got so much credit for, you know, what he showed in that fight, but Kelvin showed that same dog in him. You know, he just came up short. I mean, that was an epic clash. So, anyway, here's my conversation from earlier today with Kelvin Gastelum.
You're back, man. It's been a while, hey. Obviously. You know, we hadn't seen you in a while. Man, the battle you went through, man. Obviously, yeah. Physical, mental. Yeah, I mean, give me an idea what the recovery was like. And, like, was it the physical recovery that was tougher? Yeah. Or was it the mental, the emotional recovery that was tougher?
It was definitely just the physical. It was all physical, you know, because emotionally and mentally, I'm okay. You know, I can accept the loss as a man, but physically, man, I took a lot of damage, and I had to make sure I stepped away from the gym to be able to make sure my body was 100% before I start pounding on it again, you know?
Israel got a lot of praise, you know what I mean? Like, digging deep in that fifth round, I mean, that battle that you had, but you were in that same battle, you were in those same trenches, you know what I mean? Did you take something out of that? I mean, I know you would have much preferred the win.
For sure.
But to go through something like that, to be in a battle like that,
yeah.
Like, did you take something out of it? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, to be that close to winning a world title, I mean, against a guy like Izzy, I mean, it's devastating. And I went back and I've studied the film millions of times, and I've seen the little things that I've done wrong, how I can make them better, the things that I did good, how I can make them even great. So, I mean, for the next one, man, I'm excited because all those things that I know I can improve, I'm going to put it into this next fight. And it's just, I just realized that I got pushed to my limit, and my limit was way above it. You know, what I mean is I got pushed past my limits, and I got to realize that I don't have any limits, man. I can go past that now. And I'm excited for the future because it just opens up my eyes to so many things more.
That's awesome. How did you decide it's time? I mean, you know, like you said, you went through damage, you rested up. Like you said, I'm sure it was tough being that close. You know, so how did you decide, yep, I'm good, let's get back in there?
I guess I do a pretty good job listening to my body. You know, once my body is healed and I feel like it's healed and I go in there and I feel good in training, like, my body's telling me that it's time, you know, and I just listen to the body. That's what it is.
A lot of us were surprised by this matchup. I'm sure you saw the stories out there. People like, why is Till fighting Kelvin Gastelum? And Dana came out and said, Till wanted this fight. Did you want this fight? I mean, did they just come to you with it? Or were you like, oh, if he's coming up, let's do it?
I know what all the headliners have been saying, but this is what it was like from my side, okay? I wanted the fight. I asked Ali, let's get this fight going. He texted Mick and Dana and Sean. They all loved it, except Dana. So I guess they approached Darren with the fight. And I think at first they said no. And then all of a sudden, Darren comes out with the... before I get into that, Darren had said no, according to my manager. And so I'm thinking maybe I might be able to fight till late November, maybe even December, maybe even till next year, because we're trying to get like a top five fighter. Paulo Costa is fighting for the title next. Yoel just lost. I'm still waiting on the Izzy and Rob situation. Jack Hermanson's got a fight with Cannon here. So we're waiting on one of those big fights. But then I texted Ali and told him, hey, what do you think about Darren Till? He's moving up. He's a big name, you know, and I just want to fight in Madison Square Garden, you know, and sure enough, he texted Sean, he texted Mick, he texted Dana. I guess everybody loved it except Dana. They went ahead and approached Darren with the fight. He said no. Then all of a sudden, he comes out with the Instagram post calling me out, and I'm like, all right, so he wants to fight, okay.
Interesting.
But, man, at the same time, I just don't think it's a fight that's worth. At first, my thought was like, I don't know if it's worth it for me to accept this kind of fight because he is coming off 2-fight win streak. I feel like I'm still in title contention, you know, and I feel like I should get one of those top guys. But I want to fight Madison Square Garden.
That's awesome. I do wonder, it's an interesting situation, right? Like, here's a guy that's a top-ranked welterweight who has a little bit of trouble making weight.
Yeah.
So he moves up to middleweight. I mean, boy, doesn't that sound familiar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, obviously you've been through that. What do you think he's thinking in this moment? You know what I mean? Like, is he going to feel better? Is he going to feel that middleweight's weird? I mean, what's that first step into a new division life?
It's a little scary, man. It's a little scary. The guys are a little bit bigger. They hit a little harder, but they are a little slower. It's a little scary, man. I don't think it's going to be an easy transition for him. I think he's going to have trouble with these bigger guys and competing at this weight class, to be honest. I just don't – he hasn't fought guys that this big, I don't think. Has he fought in middleweight before? I don't think so. I mean, I have been fighting middleweights my entire career. I went down a welterweight for a little stint, but then I went back up.
What's your goal here, man? Because like you said, you were this close, right? I mean, it's still – I mean, that's you guys got a fantastic division. Your name's right there. I mean, are you thinking about where does this put me? How does this put me in the title picture? I mean, are you thinking about all that at all? Or is this more just about, like you said, you want to fight at Madison Square Garden. Obviously, you want to stay busy.
Absolutely.
I mean, are we thinking about where this leaves me, where this puts me, how this factors into a title shot? Or are we just thinking, let's just get in there and have some fun?
A little bit of both, but definitely I put a lot of thought into who my opponent is and why I'm fighting him, and will it get me to the title shot? Will it get me closer to where I want to go? Definitely ask those questions, and none of those apply to Darren Till. I just, you know, I don't think if I win, it's not going to get me a title shot. It's not going to get me closer. But I just think I need to go out there and make a statement against a guy like Darren Till, you know. Because of my last performance, I want to go out there. I want to show that I'm still hungry. I'm still in contention, and I'm still one of the best guys around this weight class.
So, what type of fight in your head do you think we see? I mean, obviously, you just went through one of the most epic battles of all time. Like, do you want to go do that again? You know what I mean? Or are you like, nah? You know, first round knockout, call it a day. I mean, what kind of fight are we going to see here?
Yeah, I'm expecting a short fight. You know, I'm not trying to go and have another war. I'm going to work hard so that I can be able to put this guy away.
All right, that was Kelvin Gastelum weighing in on his new matchup, admitting that, you know, he didn't really necessarily love the idea at first, but, you know, it's the biggest name available to him, and I think it does make sense when you consider the fact that everybody's kind of tied up right now at the top of the division. Then, hey, at least you can bring in a big name, even if you're not getting somebody that's ranked. So, anyway, hey, listen, if you like what you're listening to, and I mean, I think you should, look at these experts that are here just bringing you the knowledge, do us a favor and make sure that you're subscribed in iTunes. If you can, log in, rate us, give us 5 stars if you can, review us. You could be like my man right here, Feliciano MMA, said, this is a fun show from two guys. Well, today it's two guys and a girl, but I know what he means. From two guys that the MMA community respect. It's two guys who love talking about MMA, and their enthusiasm is contagious. Always learning something new about a fighter or an event when listening to the show. Highly recommend for any fight fan. So thank you for that, sir. I appreciate that. All right, let's talk about the prelims here, guys. Interesting. You know what's funny is, well, I guess it's not funny because we'll get to why. The first women's fight ever to be contested here, and not actually just one. There's two of them. But I did see, as we were hanging around the host hotel and working, I've seen a couple of papers and things, and I've picked it up. And, I mean, that's been a storyline here. So it's not just like anything. And I actually did hear, and I don't know if this is the case moving forward, but I was actually told that the UFC was basically told to have a women's fight on here. So I guess the Abu Dhabi government wanted to have a women's fight, which I guess tolerance is, you know, growth, progression. You know, I guess that's what they want to do. So two women's fights on here. Joanne Calderwood versus Andrea Lee is actually a very meaningful fight. Of course, Calderwood was in a fight that a lot of us thought was probably a number one contender fight. Didn't end up being that way. She lost to Chookagian, very, very close fight. Now Chookagian's fighting Maya, but we were talking about the guest fighters. Valentina Shevchenko is here. I spoke to her. She said that, you know, she really thought she was going to fight Chookagian and Maya. Now they're fighting each other, and they're fighting in November. Valentina Shevchenko wants to fight before the end of the year. So I asked her, I was like, well, you know Maya, and they're not going to turn around Chookagian. So, like, Calderwood Lee, could the winner here maybe do it for you? And she said, yeah, you know, the winner might, you know, maybe this could be a number one contender fight. So interesting there. Lerone Murphy is a late notice guy coming in. The Lauren Murphy, I think, on ESPN for a while, which is funny. She can't get her name messed up too much. But
Barb?
Yeah, exactly. But Barb, so great. I don't know. A lot of names in here. I know that you did some great interviews with Bilal Muhammad as well. I mean, give me an idea kind of what's standing out to you most about this prelims or something that people could kind of latch on to or get excited about.
Well, there are a couple of things. Well, Don Madge has been a guy that he's an exciting prospect, and he hasn't fought in a while. And I asked him that. I'm like, where have you been and stuff? And then he's like, nothing really. He's like, I've been training, helping Cyborg train. And then he's like, I want it on the Stockholm card. And then he had a management issue, changed management. He's with Paradigm now, and they got in this fight. So he was supposed to fight Magomed Mustafaev, which he was really excited about.
Right.
He thought it was a USADA issue with Mustafaev, so he got really angry on social media and stuff. And then he's like, I found out it wasn't.
That's right. Didn't he post like yeah, yeah. USADA? And like, no, it wasn't?
No, it wasn't, because the fans started telling him USADA. They're probably like going with what it typically could be. And then he went with it, and then he's like, oh, I felt bad because I found out he was sick or something like that.
Whoops.
But he's just excited to fight, I think. It's been a while. He had a great knockout in his debut against Tay Edwards.
And right.
You want to build off of that. So I think his name has been a bit in the headlines because of Cyborg, which has been good for him.
Right.
And the light shed on South African MMA, but now he gets to fight in Abu Dhabi. He kicks off. I think he's just excited to fight, to be honest. Like, he doesn't care who he's fighting. And he's another guy that people have been wondering where he's been. So I think he's one to watch for sure. And then you've got, like, Bilal is, he's a great fighter. You know, he's on the cusp of the top 15. He had that loss to Jeff Neal, but he was on a solid win streak before that. He's a guy that will fight anyone. And I always ask him about that. I'm like, how come?
This is a tough assignment.
Exactly. Like, you're fighting a guy who's only fought once in the UFC. He had a good finish over Ben Saunders, but Bilal doesn't care. Like, he takes any fight. He's always had criticism towards guys who will call out people or be like, I won't fight. He's like, the problem is people in the top 15 are afraid to lose their ranking,
right,
which is why they won't fight a guy like him. So he doesn't care. And that approach is great for the fans, but it's also a bit risky, because when you're on a nice win streak and you fight a tough guy that may not have the name or the ranking, it might push you behind. But for him, he just fights anybody. But what's funny is, like, they're not giving him the attention I feel like he deserves. He wasn't in open workouts. He's not in the media day, which
right.
I'm really surprised about, because I'd say, I know he's not based in the Middle East, but if you're looking at the fighters on the card, he's well-respected in the UFC.
Yep.
He's well-respected in the UFC. He's got some really good wins. It's not like it's his debut or anything. And he had that joke where he's like, I'll do push-ups outside of Starbucks. And
right.
The fans actually showed up. So he had a lot of people come take pictures with him, which was cool. But I was telling him, I'm like, it's weird that they don't have you in the open workouts. They don't have you in media day. I just found the whole thing weird, especially that he's been speaking out about a lot of these things, like
yep.
what it means for him as a Palestinian fighter, and then a lot of Muslims being on the card. So he's been speaking about issues outside of fighting. So you would think the spotlight would be on him from the local media as well. I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm trying to do my part. But I'm like, what's going on? It was a little bit weird, because I'm like, this guy has solid wins in the UFC.
Yep.
I'm like, if you should be focusing on anyone, it's him.
It's true.
He's one of them. He's probably the most established one out of them.
That's true, and that really could be a good fight. If you know, Takashi Sato, as you said, his opponent had an incredible UFC debut.
Yep.
He looked very, very good there. And Bilal can come in and bang. That could be a lot of fun on the prelims. Muslim Salikov is a very, very exciting fighter there against Nordin Tlaib. I mean, that could have fireworks written all over it as well.
Yeah, Nordin's been training a lot in Thailand recently. I actually was in Thailand. I was in Phuket not long ago, and I got to see him train. And so obviously he's been focusing on his striking, and we've seen him grapple a lot in his earlier fights. And but then in the Ultimate Fighter, remember when we saw him have these wars to get into the house, he lost. And it was weird because he somehow got a third chance. We don't often see that.
Right.
He lost the fight in the house, and then the Nations one, he lost the first mm-hmm. fight, and he's in the UFC. So I feel like he was having those wild fights in the Ultimate Fighter, striking, and they were fun. But then he suddenly changed his approach, because he probably realized that if I want to stay in the UFC, they've given me so many chances.
Yep.
So it started to be heavy grapple approach, which mm-hmm. wasn't the most entertaining. And then he had that knockout over Eric Silva. And they're like, all right, this guy's got hands. Like, he can fight. And this matchup's fun. Like, I feel like it's going to be wild.
Salikov's good. Bond, tell me what you're looking out for. Anybody that you think people need to keep an eye on, or a fight that you personally are looking forward to?
I mean, I'm interested in Lee versus Calderwood. I think that's kind of – obviously, it's kind of the centerpiece of the prelims here, but that's an important fight for 125, especially for Andrea Lee. We spoke at Media Day, and she said she feels the title shot could be hers with a win here, so that's pretty interesting. She just signed a new UFC contract starting with this fight now. She said she basically feels the UFC is grooming her for a title shot opportunity, and you know, it's coming along, and it may not be after this fight, it may be the next one or something, just depending how the timing lines up, but I think that's a fight people would be interested. I mean, she's got pretty damn good stand-up skills,
yeah.
And that could make
it's going to be a fun fight.
Could be interesting with Shevchenko, and obviously with Calderwood, you know, talking about the first step here. So yeah, I mean, she did say that she feels she has a good chance of beating Valentina Shevchenko.
You know, it's
not the most confident statement.
I was listen, it's funny. I was going to tell you, because I don't know how much you could pick up on it, because you were talking to Andrea Lee. Obviously, you know, you're in front of the camera. You're dealing with her, but her team was basically behind me as I was filming. Yeah, and as soon as, like, you know, that kind of got brought up, and she you know, she was very subtle, like, hey, I'm down for that. I'd take that fight. And
right.
they were like, yeah, we will. We're done. You know, that they think they got the recipe to beat her.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I'd be in.
Because I don't see a lot of people saying, oh, Valentina, yeah, we got that. That's easy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm as interested in that fight as, you know, or more so than a lot of the other options. Like, I'd rather see that than the Liz Carmouche fight or something. I know
right.
There was some interest. It's easy to say in hindsight, knowing how terrible that fight was.
Right.
But I think just like style wise,
it'd be
it's a bit compelling.
We knew that was going to be a bit of a grind. This
yeah.
one, if she happens to get by. Now again, she got a tough test in Joanna Calderwood, who again lost a very very narrow decision. Tough fight there, but we'll see. Yeah, real implications there. Well, cool. All right. Well, listen, we need to go get some dinner and some cocktails. We need to enjoy Abu Dhabi a little bit. We haven't had much of a chance to enjoy the nightlife and the scenery here.
Is there nightlife here outside of the hotels?
No, there's not at all. We're basically just going to go down to the bar downstairs and get some food, is what I'm saying. So, let's stop talking. Let's go get some frosty beverages, which, by the way, are not to be consumed anywhere else except in the hotels. The only place you can do that. It's a different world over here. It's a different world over here, but we're enjoying it. So while we go do that, you guys get ready for UFC 242. Thanks for listening.